Hi there, everybody. This is Armand DeMel with you with The Positive Mind. Here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial in New York City. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And today we're in the studio. Today we're talking about depression, some other aspects about depression. Why do we talk about depression? Because, you know, there would be no need for a positive mind if we didn't have depression, the other side of it. Because depression is, I guess, the opposite of a positive mind. Now, I don't think the opposite of depression is happy. And as we had our guest yesterday on the air telling us, or day before yesterday telling us, Andrew Solomon came in to speak about depression. He wrote a wonderful book called The Noonday Demon. The opposite of depression is normalcy, not happiness. Happiness is a very particular state of mind, like you get happy on your birthday, like Jana does today, because it's her birthday and in the studio with us. Happy, special events. But happiness is one thing. That might be the condition of living, you know. I feel happy most of the time. Depression is another thing. Depression is, we're trying to understand it. I mean, we're so trying to understand it that the medical industry, the drug industry, is getting billions of dollars poured into drugs that are now people are consuming all over the world. You know, France has tripled the consumption of SSRIs, antidepressive drugs, than the United States does. What do the French have to get depressed about? They got the Eiffel Tower. No, I mean, I'm only kidding, of course. But it's, no, the idea that maybe what you do is if you inhibit emotions that much and if you feel that having an emotional outburst is such a bad thing, what you tend to do is try to push yourself down. Therefore, England and France would be much more likely to try to go for a medical solution to the depression because it's hard to understand. You know, maybe. Let's look at depression a little closer today. Today I'm going to look at it as if you're trying to help deal with somebody who is depressed. What do you do when somebody you know is depressed and you want to help them out? Well, we think we used to know. We thought we used to know. Bring them to the comedy club, right? Have them get some laughs. Cheer them up. Tickle them. Right? No. It doesn't work. One person I knew said, whenever I get depressed, the worst thing you could do is give me a gift. It makes me more depressed. Well, that's a funny thing. Why would that be? Because the gift does not cheer me up. And the fact that the gift doesn't cheer me up, it makes me more depressed. Interesting, huh? How the mind works? Yes, depression is an unusual thing. It's unusual, and we're going to begin to understand how depression works. We need to understand how it works. One of the things we know about depression is that you can't almost ever see anything positive, and we couldn't understand why. They have the theory of the glass half empty and the glass half full. The theory is that a person who is depressed will see everything in the world as missing something, as negative. Whereas the person who is not depressed we'll see everything slightly optimistically. So the pessimistic look for life is you look at a glass that's half filled and you say, oh, the glass is half empty. And the other person will say, no, that glass is half full. Pessimistic versus the optimistic way of looking at something. Well, why? Why do certain people have a negative approach to life and positive people don't? Why is it? Why does that mean? Well, we're learning that it has to do with chemistry a great deal. Doesn't mean the cure is chemical, but we're understanding it's more than just a mood disorder. Yes, we have through a number of different books and research and some neuroscience, we have been humbled by how much information is now available through imaging technology, chemistry. You know, it's just all the stuff we ever suspected is being validated. But here's the unfortunate thing. You got to get to know new terms if you're going to understand it this way. There's a new language out there. There's a language that has words in it like amygdala, hippocampus, hypothalamus, pituitary, the anterior pituitary. I mean, who would ever think of such a thing? You know, he's got something in his anterior pituitary or something in his posterior pituitary. Pituitary, tiny little size of a pea thing. Right? You got your whole limbic system, which is, I'm not even going to try to teach you. Then you have a prefrontal cortex, but then there's a right and left prefrontal cortex. It's not like you could just get away with a prefrontal cortex. Then there's words like dopamine, norepinephrine, epinephrine, serotonin, serotonin inhibitors, adrenal glands, anterior pituitary. The anterior cingulate gyrus is the latest piece of information floating around there. And the anterior cingulate cortex, the ACC, is the big news on depression. Well, what does this all have to do with you? Let's see what we could learn from it, all right? The limbic system. The limbic system is the part of those, a group of organs of your brain that include a few different things like the pituitary, hippocampus, amygdala. And in this thing, they have so some people have bigger limbic systems than others. How big is your limbic system? If you have a bigger limbic system, that means proportional to your body, right? Proportional to your brain. If a limbic system occupies 1.7% in the average person, and in some people it's going to be 1.9%. That means it's bigger. Now, that's a tiny amount, but it's bigger. Women have bigger limbic systems than men. Now, what does that mean? Well, here's what we're learning. You see, this is why I think it's so interesting to learn as much as you can. And we will bring you as much of this information as we can without getting too stodgy. Women who have a bigger limbic system means they have greater feelings. It accounts for their greater feelings. Why? Because the hypothalamus, which translates emotional states into physical feelings, you see? You can have an emotional state, and then you have a physical feeling. How does it work that you have an emotional feeling like, oh, you know, I feel sad, and it turns into a physical feeling like you could feel your temperature drop, you could feel your eyes tear, sadness, or anger, right? You get angry, and you say, I got the emotion anger, but then you feel it in your body. Your fists are clenched, and you feel tense all over you. Turns out that women have a greater capacity to coordinate the emotions with physical feelings, and it'll go one of two ways. There's either relaxed feelings or there's tense feelings. Tense feelings, anger, you know, shame, tense, things that make you feel really tense, sad feelings. So women seem to have a bigger amount of this. A bigger capacity for this. Kind of makes sense because, you know, for survival, I'm sure that you were able to protect the baby better by having these greater sensors. But this is what we're beginning to see. Why does all of this mean anything, my friends? It means a great deal because we want to learn about the dark side. Truth of it is, depression is enigmatic. It's hard to figure out. It really is. We don't know what it is. We know, for example, that if a person takes an SSRI, a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor, drug, Prozac, etc., St. John's wort, I don't know if it works that way, it works sometimes, that a person feels better. So therefore we say, aha, look at that, the serotonin is what does it. Well, it turns out that's not true anymore. We thought it was raising serotonin or decrease serotonin that leads to depression? No, not that simple. The drug may work to get you undepressed, but not for that reason. Maybe it works because you think you're taking a drug, or maybe it works because it affects something else we don't even know about yet. We're learning. Think about seasonal affective disorder. How does that work? How does it work that people, when it becomes sunlight, they feel enriched and alive, and when it becomes less sunlight, right, they get depressed? How does that work? Do you think that's emotional? Do you think that's psychological? Do you think that, you know, the dark reminds them of some primitive memory of being hidden in caves? It's something funny about it. So we want to learn. We want to learn as much as we can. Not because depression is a bad thing, but depression does kind of work you away. It does kind of work at you to make you feel unhappier and unhappier. You know, people who have depressive episodes, one of the things they've learned is the more depressive episodes you have, the more you're susceptible to. So if you have if you're depressed for 3 days, and then you're depressed for 3 days, and then you're depressed for 3 days a year, the following year, you're depressed for 4 days, and then 4 days, and then 4 days. The following year, it's highly likely that eventually you stay depressed all the time. Depression, according to Andrew Solomon and a number of researchers, works at the brain in such a way that it literally chops off nerve endings. It actually is damaging. So therefore, depression is not just this benign state of mind. Depression is an acute state of mind. It's a kind of thing we have to solve. We have to get to it. Otherwise, the people wear away. And they're a little like people who are, you know, elderly who can't take care of themselves. A depressive person loses the capacity to take care of themselves. You can't lift your arm when you're depressed. You get so depressed after a while, you think in terms of economy. If you didn't hear our program that we did with Andrew Solomon on Tuesday, please, friends, go to the website, thepositivemind.com, boom. Press on the archives and listen to Tuesday's program. If you're depressed or someone you know is depressed, listen to what Andrew Solomon had to say about his experience. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. So here's a bit of information for you that I'm sure you're going to enjoy. What do you do if your wife is depressed? Buy her a bunch of flowers? No. It proves, what they found is that, and again, this is now chemical stuff that we're learning about the brain, the structures of the brain, that when a person is depressed, they cannot respond to positive things. Here's one of the definitions of depression. Depression is anhedonia. Anhedonia is the inability to feel pleasure. One of the things that go along with depression is the inability to feel pleasure. One person once described it as a depression is the inability to appreciate sunsets. You know, and I think you know what I'm talking about if you're somebody who's depressed. You get depressed. Now, depression could be triggered off by an event of some kind. You could have an event, like the event could be you get married. Right? And you get married, and then suddenly marriage doesn't turn out to be what you thought it would be. The bubble bursts. And you get depressed. And then you become anhedonic, which means you don't feel any pleasure. Now you and your mate are struggling to get by. You get depressed, and he can't do anything to help you, or you can't do anything to help him, because pleasure is what you would imagine would be the solution. Hey, I think I'll dress up fancy today. And maybe that'll turn him on. Uh-uh. Once that depression sits in, positivity is not the way to get through the depression. What they've learned is depressives respond to negativity more than they do to positivity. Well, now, this is interesting, right? So, in other words, do you go buy the flowers or do you pick a fight? Well, the answer is picking a fight seems to work better, because there's a part of the brain that is almost asleep when you're depressed. And it's so asleep that it will not respond to anything. It doesn't even respond to fear. You could threaten the person all you want, but it does respond to sadness. It does respond to pain. Not its pain, but someone else's. I'll give you an example. Person I know gets really serious premenstrual depression. Right, and she used to say that what she would do when she would get premenstrual, she knew she was getting it, and it would come on, and the depression was so bad, she would run to a video store and rent the worst movies she could find. She would rent movies like Sophie's Choice. You know, and something that is definitely going to make you cry your eyes out. She said, I take the movie, I put it on, I would get so depressed, I would sink into it, and I would cry and cry and cry, and my depression would be over. One of the things we learned at our clinic, at our center here, where we do psychotherapy with people, is people come in who are depressed. We get them into the pain of their depression rather than talking them out of it. Rather than just telling them how good their life, look, your life is really good, how could you complain? You know, one approach is to remind a person the realism of how great they are and how their life is. No, instead we take them down into it. And we say, let's go there. It's get you, you feel yourself being pulled into pain? Let's go down there with you. And we go into the cave of your depression, and we have this kind of rope, you know, you're tied to us. God, I'm going to lower you down in there, but I'm going to be right there to pull you out if you need to be. And that is effective. The person will cry, they will emote, they will feel this incredible pain, and when they come out of it, they're better. So does this mean that Of the 800,000 people a year that commit suicide out of depression, part of the problem that we have is that we don't know how to deal with it. We don't know how could somebody sitting there with you possibly help you? Medication doesn't do it. It does sometimes. Cognitive therapy sees it as a disorder of thought, and they see it as, you know, just trying to remind you over and over again that things aren't as bad as you thought they are, but it doesn't seem to work. It doesn't seem to work. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We're talking about that mood that takes over with people and you want to help them out. How do you help them out? Well, here's the answer, my friends. One of the things we're learning from the latest in chemical research, and when I say the latest in chemical research, there are so many books out there that are valuable. One that I was just looking through is Why Zebras Don't Get the Blues, right, which is a very interesting new book on neurochemistry, and then there's neuroscience and the whole thing, and then there's, what is this over here? Can Your Brain Change Your Life? By Daniel Amen, who is a neuroscientist. So much different information is coming out that I tell you, depression is no longer to be allowed as an okay thing to be. Just too dangerous. Not dangerous suicide. Dangerous damage to the brain. We can't let it be. Depressed person walking around, we got to fix it because now we can fix it. See? Now, most of the time, we can find a way in and we're learning. So we're saying that depressed people do not respond to positivity. It doesn't happen. What is the way we're going to do it? What is the way we're going to get into it? Well, one of the ways when you approach a person who is depressed, do not cheer them up. Recognize for the fact that you're angry. You, the person who are related to somebody who's depressed, is angry at the person because they won't pull themselves out of it in your mind. I want you to think to yourself, well, they can't pull themselves out of it. It's not like that. But what could we do instead? Well, here's a funny thing. If a depressed person sees somebody else sad, they respond. They start to take care of the other person. So if you wanted to do something, and you have somebody who's depressed, and you feel pain because they're not available to you and you care about them, let your pain show. Don't blame them. Don't make them guilty. But let your tears show. Yes, my friends, you let your tears show and it will connect with a part of their brain that wakes up when it sees pain, but does not wake up when it sees pleasure and does not wake up when it sees fear. There's a part of the depressed brain that responds to the pain of others. Of course there is. Why do you think so many people who are depressed are so empathic? Why do you think they have such deep feelings for causes? Why do you think they want to watch those miserable movies, you know, that make them cry? Because there is a part of the brain that wakes up to other people's misery. So we're learning a great deal here. Now we're learning something about science and something about the human brain that will give us a big hint. Wait a minute now, the reason that people who are depressed do not respond to positive things is because their brain stays asleep with positive things, but it wakes up to the cries of others. Now, here's the one thing, the one secret about this. You cannot blame them. You can't say to them, I'm crying. Why are you crying? I am crying because you won't get undepressed. Well, that's not going to work. But I'm crying because I'm so sad, because I miss you so much. Because I miss you and I see how upset you are. And I know that there's nothing you could do about it and there's nothing I could do about it. But you know, I just miss you. And it makes me weep. You'd be shocked at what the response is. Here on The Positive Mind, we're telling you, my friends, the power to help somebody with their depression is the honesty of your feelings, the honesty of your emotions. Not the honesty of your thoughts and not blaming them, that's for sure. Not saying, because there's enough guilt. Depressed people feel a tremendous amount of guilt. Oh my God, do they hate feeling like that? Do they know that they're such a drag? They know it. They know the cost all around them. They think on some level they should be able to come out of it, you know? But the brain is working funny. And when the brain is working funny, we're trying to learn all the tools we can to help you with it. And one of the ways that we could do it is if you love somebody and care about somebody who is depressed, try not to cheer them up, number one, and try not to blame them. Neither of those two would work. Get them some help. Get them some professional help. Sometimes just talking about stuff helps. But one of the things you do when you talk about your stuff to a therapist is the therapist doesn't necessarily say, what are you talking about? Life is really good. A therapist takes you seriously, and one of the things you want when you're depressed is to be taken seriously. Let's hear from you. I'm curious about your own experience with that. We're going to talk a little more about this today. I want to bring you some other interesting things about impulse control related to depression. Our telephone number here is 212-209-2900. You are our audience. We do adore you. I mean, we think you are terrific. We are very proud to have you with us. 212-209-2900. I want to take your calls today. And I want to see about your relationship to, specifically, I'm going to ask you questions about how you relate to somebody who is depressed and how you, when you're depressed, want to be approached. Let's take one of your calls. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Hello, Armand.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm great. Who is this?
I'd rather not give my name, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
Okay. I really have, you know, that approach you just mentioned. I'm in a relationship with someone who is not, it's a woman, actually, and the only time she has those episodes are during the menstrual period.
Uh-huh.
And you know what? I never get nervous talking, and I'm really nervous now. It's really weird.
Okay, so I'll tell you what. Why don't we slow it down a little? Do you have your radio shut off completely?
Yeah.
Okay. So...
All right,
take a wait. No. Don't do it. Don't do it, because this is going to show you why you're not effective with your friend when she is depressed, because you rush, and you're going to rush through it. Don't rush through it. You are nervous, right? So slow down a second. I'm going to stay with you. There is no need for you to hurry anything.
Okay.
Take a breath with me, my friend. Yeah, that's much better, much, much better. I hear it. Okay, now slow it down and let's talk about it. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you.
So she gets this kind of mood.
Yeah, I mean, she's an incredible, wonderful person. The only problem we have is that during the menstrual cycle, it's very, very sensitive. And I've done what you mentioned to do. I don't blame her. I just say, you know, it hurts me to see you like this. And I've literally, you know, it has hurt me to see her like that. It does, and she sees the pain, and she has awakened. She's come quickly out of it sometimes. But the two problems with that is that, number one, usually, no matter how I say it, she she's going to take it like I'm judging her and I'm making it worse, and now she feels more guilty. That's number one. And I've done it the way you said. I'm pretty good at that. And then the other one is that I'm a very calm person, but eventually my dilemma is the resentment that builds up in me for always having to be the one that's in control, you know? And that I think eventually is going to rear its ugly head, sort of.
You know, I know what you're saying. It's a feeling that a lot of people have. They're afraid. You know, I can't believe a part of the reason that men are so cruel to women in our society, which it really seems like they are, you know, that part of that cruelty is kind of this hidden resentment. Because nobody's at fault. It's the way things are. Why do we imagine that the other sex should be different, should be the same as us?
Right.
That they shouldn't be so sensitive. I mean, thank God for that sensitivity.
Right.
If not for that, you wouldn't get all of the goodies.
Right.
So somehow it's reframing it in your mind. Somehow, and I know it's very difficult to live with, but somehow it's eventually reframing it in your mind. Now, I want to know one thing from you.
Yeah.
In this wonderful person who you love so much, tell me the very two best qualities she has. The very, very, very best. The very... like nobody else in the world, and you could be anything, anything you say. Two first things that come to you.
There's so many, but the two first things is she's just such an incredibly loving and a giving person, and I love her sense of humor. You know, I love being around her.
Okay.
Those are two really wonderful
things. And in her sensitive, giving person, does she give to you? Does she give to you? Does she cook for you? Does she make love with you?
Everything.
Everything. She's sensuous beyond...
everything. Beyond all your wildest dreams.
Beyond all my wildest dreams. You have somebody you're close to who gives you more loving and has a great sense of humor.
Absolutely.
So she has this incredible range.
Incredible.
Right? This range that goes over the top as far as sensuality, beauty, giving, loving, and sense of humor, which is very important.
Yeah.
And then it goes all the way down in the bottom. Here comes the deal. Now, I could tell you that she could take a pill, and it would take 20% off her depression and 20% off her elation. That's the trouble with the pill. The pill takes 20% off the top and 20% off the bottom. Should she take that pill? She'd just be 20% less loving, 20% less sensuous, 20% less giving, but she'll be less depressed.
Right.
How about it? You want to give her the pill? Hey, thank you. Your answer, there's the dilemma. The dilemma is, my friend, we want only the good part. You know, and we don't think about the fact that if we give up the bad part in people, sometimes if we try to change people, we lose some of their beauty.
Right.
Thank you for calling in.
Can I add one more quick thing?
Sure.
You're right. You know, what I realized in the last month or so is that I'm better at just accepting her the way she is. You know, and it's colored the whole relationship. By just accepting it as part of it, you know? I mean, there's worse things to be.
That's right.
So I get your point. Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate it. And the one last thing, you know, I went through a period of time where, you know, we all have troubles, and you're dealing with depression now. The one thing that has helped me with, say, procrastination really is just accepting it and saying, so what? So I'm depressed. You know, a lot of the problem comes after. You know, like the depression is only one thing. It's falling into the abyss. All the things we do after the depression that really create the problem.
That's a very good point. We're going to have to leave. We have to take a break. I appreciate it. Thank you for calling in. We're going to take a short break, my friends. It's 1:30 here at WPAI 99.5 FM in New York. When we come back, a little music for you, and then we'll be back on air.
We are so wet, so gospel choir.
Zumbaba, 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 zumbaba.
And you are listening to BAI New York, BAI New York, San Bonani.
me my melancholy baby. Cuddle up and don't feel blue. All your tears are foolish fancy, maybe. You know, dear, that I'm in love with you. Every cloud must have a silver lining. Wait until the sun shines through. Smile, my honey dear, while I kiss away each tear, or else I shall be melancholy too. Come to me, my melancholy baby. Cuddle up and don't feel blue. All your tears are foolish fancy, maybe. You know, dear, that I'm in love with you. Every cloud must have a silver lining. Wait until the sun shines through. Smile, my honey dear, while I kiss away each tear, or else I shall be melancholy too.
And that's Billie Holiday. No, I'm sorry. That's Jimmy Rushing with Dave Brubeck. Jimmy Rushing, Come to Me, My Melancholy Baby. Don't miss, if you get that album, my friends, which I've recommended many times, River, Stay Away From My Door. Oh, remarkable piece. Jimmy Rushing, Dave Brubeck Quartet. This is Armand DeMille with you with a positive mind. If you just passed by your station and you said, and listen to that fabulous music, let me see what they're going to play next. No, no, no. We are not just a jazz station. This is The Positive Mind. It's a program. It's a program on WBAI, the listener-supported station. And what we present to you is different aspects of different psychological phenomena so that you could understand people and yourself better, with the idea being that the more understanding you have, the kinder you will be. Now we're talking about depression today, and we're talking about depression and how unkind, as our caller said to us, you know, that resentment you get towards people are depressed. Yes. Yes, you do resent when people are depressed because it seems like they should be able to pull out of it. And the truth of it is, my friends, your efforts to pull them out, come to me, my melancholy baby, does not always work. Sometimes what you need to do is step back, stay with them, hold their hand, stand with them, like Andrew Solomon said. You know, even sit outside the door. Do not leave them to their own destruction, because depression is something that will hurt you. Not hurt you in the form of suicide. That's one form, 800,000 suicides a year. But hurt you in the form of it really takes away your ability to recover from depression the more depressed you are. So if you're depressed and you get depressed again and again and again, if you get depressed in childhood, you're more likely to get depressed in adulthood. So what we're saying is, you got to get help with it. Get help with it, because it's foolish not to try. Of course, go in the nutritional route. Go see Majid Ali. Go do the Gary Null diet. Go find the thing that you could do to clean out your body, get it as clean as possible. Let's take step one. That makes sense. If you're eating a lot of sugar and you're eating a lot of hamburgers and stuff like that, you're probably depressing yourself in some way. Maybe for a good reason. Maybe you can't stand where you're living and you hate your life situation, so you think, oh, well, I'll just go to sleep. So you depress yourself with food and with chemicals and alcohol and drugs. Okay, that's one. If you don't like the depression and you want to get yourself out of it, maybe you could stimulate yourself to have a better life, and the way to do that is clean up your diet. Clean it up. Dump the fast food for a little while. See what it's like to do your fruit juices or your regular juices, vegetable juices. Clean yourself fast for a couple of days. See what it's like. See what that feels like to get cleaned out. And then see if that lifts you. Now, if it does, and you find that just food alone will recover you, well, that's terrific. That's great. But we have found that the chemistry of depression is such that it does not necessarily yield to changes like food only. Sometimes you need something additional. And sometimes you need either a talking cure, which is going into therapy, or you need something in addition to that, something more proactive. The one thing we know for sure is you can't afford to stay this way. And if you have somebody you love who is depressed, you don't stop hunting. You know, it's like cancer. It's like saying, you know, somebody I love is sick. How do you leave them alone? How do you just leave them? Let them go through it. Well, one of the things we know, cheering them up doesn't work, doesn't mean that they're not going to recover. We are beginning to learn that there is a region where they will respond, which is a region that is different in the brain than we had known. And there are new ways and different ways of dealing with it. We're going to take in your calls about it, then I'm going to bring you some interesting stuff about impulses. Telephone number here is 212-209-2900. We're taking your calls, 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Hello.
Hi, this is Rita Joya.
Hello, Rita Joya.
God bless you for your beautiful program.
Thank you, Rita.
And I'm so happy you took my call. I live with my husband for 32 years, and he's a very depressed man all the time, you know, like the whole thing you said. I left him, and then I came back because he was so depressed and he cried and he wanted forgiveness, and my son helped me to come back. Now he's going to be 60 next month and he's going to retire, but he's so depressed, and he instead to be happy. And I didn't understand all these things that you say now, because you said it's in imbalance of the brain. You know, I used to say, grow up, get over with, all these things. But
sure.
Now, the way you're saying this is a bless, because, you know, I used to blame him for being that way. And he works very, very hard, and he likes to save money. And his addiction that he thinks that he's going to find happiness is sex. And it's, I lived very hard life with him, and but now you made me understand that it's an imbalance. And
good, Rita. There's some additional information here that you're giving us, okay?
Uh-huh.
Yes, the guy's got stuff going up in his mind,
uh-huh.
and his depression is such that the nature of it, pulling it out, doesn't work.
Uh-huh.
But he does seem to respond to one drug, and that's to sex. Sex does something for him that gives him a temporary relief.
In that moment, yes.
In that moment. You know, it's a funny thing about sex addiction when you're depressed.
Mm-hmm.
Sex addiction is a little like masturbation. It's not very much of a difference. You get excited, you have the sex, and then it's gone.
Right.
But then another charge of it is getting it to happen. Now, does he choose you and other sex partners, or just you?
Just me.
And so you find that he's got to have you all the time?
Yes.
How often?
Well, now that it's not that often because he's 60, but before it could be every day.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah.
And your own feeling about it, did you enjoy the sex with him?
No.
Why?
Because it was too much.
Every day was too much.
Yeah.
So it's something, there's some kind of an imbalance between the two of you where his need didn't meet with your need, but now as his sexual desire decreases,
yeah.
does his depression increase?
Yes.
All right, so now we're saying that there really is some stuff going on inside him that's chemical change, and it may not just be chemical change, it could be psychological, you know?
Right.
In other words, the chemical takes place is what we've learned, and the psychological plays a big part in triggering the chemistry.
Uh-huh.
Your husband, what's his first name?
Tony.
Tony needs to talk to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Tony, has Tony spoken to anybody about his depression?
He did, but they give him medication, which he hates, and then he gave it away.
Yes, and which medication did they give him?
I don't remember.
Do you know if they gave him Prozac?
No, it was not Prozac. Well, she gave him first one medication, and then she changed, and then she increased the little by little.
Yeah, you see.
And so he was feeling better, and for a while, but then he was complaining. He didn't like it, so he stopped it.
Do you remember when he was taking the medication? Were you with him when he was taking the medication?
Yes.
When he was taking the medication, did he find himself having more difficulty with sex than usual?
No, no.
His sex drive maintained throughout the whole thing?
He just took maybe for 3 months, 3 or 4 months.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, I suspect that since most of those medications do affect the sex drive,
mm-hmm.
that somewhere, some part of him inside was responding to it. But again, they go to medication because they don't know any alternatives.
Right.
Tony needs to talk to somebody other than somebody who would give him sex because we have a danger here.
Yeah.
Tony's going to retire. Mm-hmm. I'm worried about his retirement.
Right.
I'm worried about a man who is already depressed, who has a sexual addiction, who retires.
Yeah.
Now we got a double whammy on him, you know?
Yeah.
So I want to get him some help, and you need to find him to somebody, you know? Send him to somebody who he could talk to.
Yeah, I heard you have a clinic in Manhattan?
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
Or so either get, you know, go through the physical body self, either get him through some kind of a health regime, or call my office and I'll find you somebody to see Tony.
Yeah, because I was planning to run away where nobody would know me no more. So that's the only way to end up this problem. But now that I'm hearing this, I said maybe there is a hope.
There is a lot of hope.
Yeah.
There's a lot of hope. And I tell you, I can fully understand and respect, Rita, why you want to run away.
Yeah.
Because you feel helpless and powerless with it, as most people do.
Right. Before, when I used to cry, he used to like it. And I say, you know, that's no good because it's like misery loves company. I said, I'm not crying no more. So I begin.
But wait a minute. Remember what I said before?
Mm.
He used to love it not because misery loves company, but because it made him feel alive
when you cried.
You see, your tears actually worked for him.
Yes.
This is validation of this hypothesis that I've been working with, which is that the brain of a depressed person is non-responsive to pleasure,
right?
But is responsive to someone else's pain. It's a very interesting thing.
You made me understand this today. But before I said, no, he's so mean. He likes to see me miserable.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then
yeah,
you
no,
said
it's not, it's not meanness.
Yeah, but then you said that, you know, don't give a person a gift because he gets more upset.
You know why you get upset? You get upset when you get a gift because you don't feel like you like it because you're saying, what's the matter with me? Here, my wife is giving me something beautiful and I can't respond.
Why, he thinks he doesn't deserve?
No, because the brain doesn't activate to pleasure.
Okay.
You see, it's not even that kind of far of a thinking, but once you notice that you can't enjoy something pleasurable, it makes you feel more miserable. So don't give him presents.
Uh-huh.
Show him your tears. Get him to somebody who could help him. Really, it's for 60 years old, the guy is entitled to get a fresh look at this, okay?
Thank you, Armand. You are a bless.
Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you. Bye.
Rita Joya, WBAI. Jana Lemoniatz, WBAI. Yesterday was Billie Holiday's birthday. All right, today's Houdini's birthday and Jana's birthday. And not to mention many other things that we probably should celebrate, you know, like Paula's anniversary. And, you know, just so many special things happening. Special moments are great, except when you're depressed. When you're depressed, you know what an anniversary feels like? A task. It's like nothing you want to celebrate. You just want I can't take it. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. We're taking your calls on this precious time that we have here at BAI before our fund drive starts again in May. We're going to grab every minute we can. Hey, this is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. You're on the air. Hello there.
Good afternoon, Armand. How are you?
I'm good.
Thank you so much. I am really appreciating this show, as I always appreciate your show. I'm calling because I have a 19-year-old niece. She's in college, and she's depressed. And she's really angry. She's tired of positive people around her. She's been in two serious accidents in the last year. And I don't really know how to help her. My sister's going to start therapy, and she's on antidepressants. She doesn't always take them. And the show has kind of given me some ideas, you know, with your non-responsive to pleasure and responsive to pain. But I'm afraid for her, and I'm wondering,
how does she dress? Is she gothic? Is she moving on towards heavy looking stuff or what?
No, she's a bit overweight and she doesn't dress appropriately for her clothes are usually too tight.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, and she hasn't ever had a boyfriend. She has crushes, but she's never the object of their affection.
So you separated from your husband?
This is my niece.
This is your niece, but
yeah.
you separated from your husband?
Yes.
I thought so. When did you separate from him?
4 years ago.
How did that feel?
Oh, that was really tough. I was listening to the other woman, and I was, you know, realizing I left, and I didn't go back. And it's hard because he was a very depressed person as well, and it's hard to leave someone behind.
Is he still?
He doesn't talk to me, so I don't know.
Yeah.
I would imagine he is because he never went for any kind of help. So.
So depression is kind of a thing that's kind of tackled you throughout your life. Here you are again with the common syndrome, having been felt helpless with your husband and feeling helpless with your niece.
Mm.
Now, is your sister also divorced or separated?
She's remarried, and her new husband has adopted her two children, which is quite lucky.
But how does your niece get along with him?
She really uses him he's a great father. He's a fireman, and he's constantly running for her whenever she needs something. But she's not very appreciative of his efforts.
Because he's a fireman, you see.
Yeah.
You know what firemen do?
Yeah, they save people.
They put out fires.
Mm.
So she is depressed and agitated and angry, and so her problems get her the attention. And what he does is he goes to solve the problems. That's what firemen do.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the answer.
Right.
Your niece is looking for something, and I suspect she's looking for her father.
Yep.
I suspect that through her overweight, number one, and I also suspect it by the fact that she falls in love with men who are not available.
Mm-hmm.
And that she's never had a close relationship. She's a push-me-pull-you. She wants to get close to somebody, but she's afraid to. So she's close, but she's not close. She's attracting men, but she's not attracting men.
Mm-hmm.
So she's somebody who needs to talk to somebody, and she can't talk to her family because everybody's got this wonderful stepfather who's there
right.
and telling her how much she has to appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
She needs to talk to somebody.
Yeah,
now, who did you say is going in therapy, your sister or
my sister. My niece refuses to go into therapy.
Oh. Well, that's an interesting thing because your sister should be able to go with her.
She tried. She's offered it. She's offered many things, but... and it's interesting because my niece up until last year wouldn't leave my sister's side, so I really think that there's a jealousy and a competition going on for her.
I'm sure.
The person who everybody loves, and you know, all these young boys, like all of her friends love my sister.
Well, here's what I want you to do. Hang out with your niece once,
mm-hmm.
and don't invalidate anything she says.
Okay.
In fact, anything she says, go to the negative side of it.
Okay.
If she says things are not so good, you say, yeah, I know, I think things are terrible. If she says, I think the world is really full of people who betray you, say, it's a very tough, tough world. I want you to validate her perception instead of invalidating
right.
it. This may be part of the road out. From what I'm hearing, she's not classically depressed because she has both the agitation and the anger.
Mm-hmm.
And the accidents are all showing me some kind of attention-getting stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
But what I want as your approach is, instead of telling her how good life is and how good her stepfather is mm-hmm. and how good everything is I want you to hang out with her for one period of time, and I want you to see what happens if you validate her perceptions by agreement.
Okay.
And then I want you to get back to me and let me know how that was.
Thank you so much. This is
great
advice. I appreciate it. I love you.
Sure. Thank you. Thank
Bye-bye.
You. You can get back to me by email, Armand, A-R-M-A-N-D, at BrainLink, BrainLink.com. And by the way, my friends, a number of people have written to me and asked me questions, and I try to give as much help as I can from time to time. If you send me an email, and the email is a little longer than usual, let's say it's more than a page, I'm stuck. I need nice size printing. You know, I need nice normal fonts. And keep it within, you know, one page or whatever one page printed would be. And I'll try my best to respond. I generally do respond to everyone. And unless you don't mention to me that you want a response, sometimes people just want me to know. And there are also a lot of answers already about human functioning on our new website, which is thepositivemind.com. You got to take a look at it. It's really good. There's lots of information, lots of fun in there. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We're going to take one more call. Hi there. You're on the air. One more, Michael. He thought I was winding up. Hi there.
Hi. Hi, Armand. How
are
you
Hi doing? There. Good.
Cool. Yeah, it was interesting what you said. You know, when I get depressed, I generally don't like being around happy people.
Oh, it's miserable, isn't it? You feel so alone.
I don't know. I feel like I tend to pick fights with people,
mm-hmm.
but in the process of the fight, I think I feel like inside, like something waking up, and I don't know. I mean, I do that with my mother a lot and some certain friends, and I think at times they get angry because I always pick fights with them.
And you do this when you're depressed, right?
Generally, yeah.
Yeah, you know, depression is kind of an interesting fortress.
Uh-huh.
It's like it's an incredible place to hide behind the fortress of your depression and then take a couple of shots at people. And then they finally shoot back, and then you kind of get angry. And here goes to this point about anger and depression and how they're related. Everybody, a very wise man I know, Peter Hogan, used to say, look, it's either anger or depression. Take your choice. He said, all depressed people are angry. He said, and all angry people are depressed. He said, so it's either one or the other. So it's a funny thing. There you are when you're depressed. You take a couple of shots, you get angry, you have an angry exchange with somebody, and you start to feel better.
Yeah, it's kind of silly.
No, not silly. You're serving the brain. Believe it or not, you are in the service of your anticular gyrus, gyrus, clamus, all these other words that we're learning. Anticular, Anterior cingulate gyrus. My gosh almighty, how much do we have to learn yet? Nice thing about the new world. Listen, my friend, we have to be going, unfortunately. I wish I could spend more time with you. I thank you very much for calling in. I will be back with you all Tuesday upcoming at 1 p.m. This is Armand DeMille, thepositivemind.com. Back with you soon, my friend.
Do jeitinho dela andar, nem ninguém tem carinho assim para dar. Eu vejo na luz dos seus olhos as noites do rio ao luar. Vejo a mesma luz, vejo o mesmo céu, vejo o mesmo mar. Ela é meu amor, só me vê a mim que vivi para encontrar. Na luz.